All right. Thank you, committee. It is Wednesday, January 11th, 2023, and I call the meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order. There is a quorum present. Thank you. And we will start with the approving the minutes. Representative Berg, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have had the chance to review them and so moved.
All right. Representative Berg moves the minutes from Tuesday, January 10th. Any discussion of the minutes? All right, we'll take a vote then. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Berg. All right. Well, we have an exciting committee today that I know that everybody is looking forward to hearing the testimony and learning about the bills that we have before us today. As a general comment, it's not as if I had great foresight, but it did end up that the two bills that we have today are really about students and our schools in Minnesota. So it's not about school districts, it's not about administration, all of those really important things to education in Minnesota, but we're starting with the students and people that are going to speak for the students. So we're very, very happy with the two presentations, the two bills that we will hear today. All right. So first of all, we will start with House File 5. And we have Representative Sydney Jordan, who is not a member of this committee this year. And so, again, Representative Berg, would you move the bill for House File 5 to be before the committee to be referred to Education Finance?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that bill House File 5
correct.
Be moved to Ed Finance.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Burke. Did we get that right? Thank you. This is important stuff. We don't mess around with it. All right. And we have, I see what we could have done there. Okay. So we have the bill author, Representative Jordan, and Jordan, would you like to introduce your bill, please, and identify yourself for the record?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Berg, for moving my bill. My name is Sydney Jordan. I represent 60A. I've served on this committee every year. I've been in the legislature until now, and I miss it, but I'm happy to serve with many of you on Ed Finance. Minnesota is a state that values education and wants to see every child succeed. I know every member of this committee wants that. But unfortunately, Minnesota falls short of creating equal opportunities for all students without exception. And in a state with an agricultural tradition as rich as ours, it is particularly unacceptable for any child to go hungry. When 1 in 6 Minnesota school children are trying to learn on an empty stomach, it's past time for the legislature to act. And that's why I'm honored to present House File 5, a bill to bring universal breakfast and lunch to Minnesota students. This bill requires schools to participate in the federal community eligibility provision, or SEP. You might also refer to it as CEP. They're interchangeable. CEP is a federal program that provides universal, no-cost meals at schools in high-poverty neighborhoods where many students come from, families eligible for SNAP and other assistance programs. Students and their families do not need to apply for CEP like they do with free and reduced-price lunch programs. Minnesota currently ranks 47th in the nation for schools enrolled in CEP. And with this bill, we'll fully leverage all federal funds available through CEP. I have incredible testifiers here today to provide context for why this bill is so necessary. But before they speak, I do want members to know that now is the time for House File 5. Schools are no longer receiving the resources they need for meals from the federal government like they did for the past several years. Student lunch debt is racking up across the state. Families struggling with the high cost of food need these bills now. With that, Madam Chair, I'd like to move to testimony.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. And before we move to our first testifier that's here in person, I would also note for our members that there is more testimony in your packets today. So a lot of people wanted to weigh in and give support to this bill. So I hope that you'll take a moment to look at some of the additional testimony in addition to the people that we will hear today. Also, I think we have enough time to really hear from folks, but we're hoping that no testimony is going to go past 5 minutes, so 5 minutes or less, and we'll be watching the time a little bit, but hope that that's, I think that's as expected, and we'll try to move things along. And our first testifier on my list is Colleen Moriarty, the Executive Director of Hunger Solutions Minnesota. Please again identify yourself again for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Colleen Moriarty, and I'm the Executive Director of Hunger Solutions Minnesota. First of all, I want to thank Representative Jordan. She's been a warrior on behalf of every school child in the state of Minnesota. It means so much to us, and it's made a great difference already. So I just want to preface my remarks by saying that there is a broad-based coalition of organizations, both private business, public nonprofits, that have been working on this for several years. They include my co-chair for the leadership of the organization, which is Janelle Waldock from Blue Cross Blue Shield. She was exposed to COVID and is not here to be able to be here this afternoon. I think the most important thing about this is that we are a state that has looked at the achievement gap and looked at equity gaps in the state of Minnesota. And this certainly has been one that's existed for a long time. The federal school lunch program has gone through many iterations, but the importance of making it universal is another step towards making kids be able to bridge that achievement gap. Full stomachs make better learners. Just to let you know about the current status of food insecurity in the state of Minnesota, we work with the State Department of Human Services on collecting data on visits to food shelves. And in the past year, food shelf visits have gone from 3.2 million to almost 6 million this year. So there have been a 2 million person increase, 2 million visits increase to food shelves. And I think one of the reasons for that, as you can well imagine, is that during the pandemic, because of the supports that were there, we were able to keep the food shelf visits down because there were supports for families. And as those have peeled off, including universal meals, we have seen these visits grow and grow and grow. And it doesn't matter what part of the state that we're talking about. We're talking about people in great need, people who don't have, because of the cost of inflation of food, who don't have the resources to be able to feed themselves or their families. That's why now is the time to act on the Universal Meals Program. This is the way to make sure that kids are fed. We don't ask children to pay for a ride on the bus. We don't ask them to pay for a lot of things, and a meal should be one of the things that they can count on. Because a lot of times, for the poorest children in the schools, that has been something they could count on. It has made a difference, and there have been many programs that have been built on filling that gap when school isn't in session. We know that students deserve a nutritious meal, and families deserve to have this burden off their back. If you have several kids, and you are paying for school lunch, it's more than $100 a month. That's real money, up to $150 a month. That's real money out of the family budget at a time when people just can't afford it. Even if the economic conditions increase and ease and we see more money in people's pockets, just to have this burden off their shoulder, just to know there isn't a collection agency after them, or their child isn't going to have their school lunch dumped in front of them in the garbage, or they're not going to have to wear a band or get a stamp on their hand that's a money sign. These are burdens that kids don't need in school. It separates them apart, it doesn't build unity, it doesn't promote equity, and it doesn't help our state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Colleen Moriarty. The next testifier that I have on my list is a youth, a minor, so we're not providing last names, but Will, Appetite for Change. And this is a remote testimony.
Hello?
Hello.
So, just to get started, my name is Will, and I just wanted to let you guys know what's going on and why we should have free lunch and even healthier lunch, you know? Just to start off, my mom, this morning, she actually gave me everything in her Cash App just to feed me at school. And that kind of hurt me, being like, dang, you know, she has to pick between a meal for herself or a meal for me. And I feel like sometimes that can separate you from other kids at my school that have all this money and everything, that are able to pay just grab whatever they want. But for me, I have to pay attention to every little thing that I grab and know all the prices and this and that for what I can have each day. And it, like she said, it does really separate the community and the school. And I was just going to say, like, if my parents can't afford my lunch at school, like, what type of meals are we eating at home? When I was younger, I would eat one thing for the whole week, like ramen noodles or whatnot, and it was like a struggle that you really couldn't get past. Like, I didn't have any nutritious food to live off of. And I feel like something that's a necessity to a human should be free for us. And especially kids, because our brains are still growing. And I, at my school, even my lunch ladies, like, they care. Like, the people at the registers, like, they care. But it also, again, it does separate. They will be like, okay, you can get this and this, and you won't go over your budget for the day. And they really have to kind of pay attention for us sometimes. And it helps a lot, but then again, it separates you from all these other kids who can grab whatever they want and just leave without having another doubt or thought in their mind. Like, oh, do I not have enough money for this? And, just to end it off, if this bill passed, it would really be a stress off of my parents and me, with me having to put in my own money into my account and me having to ask other family members for some money to eat. It's almost, what do you call it? Like, it's almost embarrassing. So, at times, and I don't think a kid should ever have to feel like that.
Thank you, Will. We were able to see you and hear you, and we really are so grateful that you would come forward and consent to be a part of this this hearing and to talk about the bill. So thank you very much, Will. The next testifier will also be remote, and is not a minor, so I will give a last name. It's Amber Lightfeather, who is a parent in the Duluth area.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, Amber. Thank you.
I'm Amber Lightfeather, and thank you for having me today. I'm testifying. I have a long history of needing help with school lunches. When I was a child, my father was mentally disabled, and so we went hungry many, many times because he was unable to fill out paperwork, and us being minors, we could not fill it out for him. So there was many days that me and my siblings did not eat lunch. I am a working mother of five children. I have four at home now. One is in college, and I make just enough money to not qualify for any help, which makes it really a tight budget because that doesn't go against how much you make, how much you spend. With all four of my kids in school currently right now, the school does not charge for breakfast. So that is a real relief for us, but it's still $231 a month for all four of my kids to eat regular lunch price. If it did include breakfast, which it may include at any time, I don't know when they're going to add it back on, but right now we're lucky, it would go up to $352 a month if they did eat breakfast on that tab. If this were passed, it would be amazing. When the kids had free lunch during the pandemic, that was such a relief off my shoulders, and they had such good food. The schools weren't struggling to obtain food monies because it was already there, and it was already there for every kid. You know, now there isn't as many people applying, and I read in the USA Today, actually today had an article about it. They're saying that some of the schools are struggling getting funding for their foods. And so if we funded this, it would be amazing all around. And I come to tears whenever I think about it, because there's so many kids that are struggling and so many parents. Like the young man that just testified reminded me of whenever I was a kid. And, you know, we shouldn't be going through that. Our kids shouldn't be going through that. So thank you.
Thank you, Amber. We're really glad that you're able to jump on the Zoom and be part of this committee hearing. Thank you so much. Next up, we have Kara Glow, a school board member from Moorhead. And I didn't say this before, and I apologize. When you come on, would you please identify yourself and just say your name for us again? I missed some of that as we switch back and forth between remote and in-person testimony. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Pryor and members of the Ed Policy Committee. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Great. My name is Kara Glow, and I'm a mental health therapist licensed in both Minnesota and North Dakota. However, I am addressing you today as a former school board member after just completing my fifth year as a director on the Moorhead Board of Education and not having sought re-election this year. As you likely know, in 2016, the USDA recommended that districts have a policy for unpaid school meal fees. I remember quite clearly when the Moorhead School Board implemented this policy for the first time. I was sitting in the audience trying to decide if I should run for election. I left that meeting under the impression that part of the USDA's recommendation was that the policy must include a provision to send families to collections for overdue school meal fees. That meeting and that understanding prompted a friend and I to launch the PB&J School Lunch Fundraiser, which went on to raise over $30,000 over 3 years and cemented my desire to serve on the board. A few years into my term on the board, I learned sending families to collections was never part of the USDA's recommendation. Upon this realization, I worked directly with the administration, individually as a school board member and as a member of one of the committees in which I served. And in 2019, we amended this policy to remove the language around sending families to collections. So, fast forward to 2022, when the USDA made a change to their policy, which previously allowed delinquent debt to be carried forward year to year if the district and the family were making good faith efforts working together to resolve the debt. The USDA change now requires school districts to classify all delinquent debt at the end of the year as bad debt and make a transfer from the general education fund to cover the debt in the food service fund, regardless of the account balance in the food service fund. Now, Moorhead Area Public School District is lucky to regularly have a positive balance in the food service fund. Despite that, our district is now required to basically rob money from our general education fund that is desperately needed to educate general and special education students to cover all the debt in the food service fund. Now, I know you are not responsible for the USDA and their policy, House Committee members. I share this as an example of the types of impossible situations school districts are left to contend with when they are responsible for the burden of feeding children at school. As legislators, I'm sure you can appreciate how complicated school finance is and the numerous difficult decisions of which districts face. Additionally, the research on the impacts of food insecurity and hunger on students' ability to learn is extensive and concrete. In the interest of brevity, I will not cite a bunch of research to you. However, I will say the research covers everything from the biology of how hunger impacts concentration to evidence that negative academic and psychosocial outcomes are associated with family-level food insufficiency, to how food insecurity affects students' perception of the school climate, which in turn affects academic outcomes, And those are just a few areas. Additionally, there are research-based guidelines for school meal policies and best practices. However, without the uniformity of a universal school meals program at the state that the state level would offer, we can be guaranteed that not all Minnesota school districts will follow these guidelines, because not all school districts can. Ultimately, the reality is not following these guidelines will negatively affect educational outcomes. Unfortunately, today, 1 in 4 food insecure students in Minnesota come from a house that does not qualify for the free or reduced price lunch school meals program. By supporting hunger-free schools, we can permanently eliminate hunger in Minnesota classrooms, remove the stigma of food insecurity, and reduce the strain of paperwork for schools and families. I hope the students, families, and school districts of Minnesota can count on your support of HF5. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Lori Smith, who is a food service worker in the St. Cloud area. And Lori, if you would again identify yourself when you come on and proceed with your testimony.
For sure. Good morning or good afternoon, everybody. My name is Lori Smith, and I am a cook in St. Cloud and a trustee on the executive board of SEIU 284. Universal free meals for students would make such a difference, and I get emotional when I talk about the kids and being hungry, so I'm sorry. I know the kids who come through my lunch line, and I know the kids who don't get enough to eat at home. And even though I'm not supposed to, those kiddos always get just a little bit extra from me. On the weekends, I make sure that them hungry kids get backpacks with food to take home with them. I know that nutrition is the most important factor for student growth and academic success. Children behave and learn better when they're well nourished. The COVID-19 crisis made it even more clear that school nutrition programs and food service employees are critical to student health and well-being. During the school closures, we distributed bagged lunches and breakfast from multiple sites across St. Cloud. Not every family could make it to the schools for curbside pickup, so we had buses that went out and delivered the meals. 120 lunch heroes in St. Cloud prepared more than 170,000 meals during that distant learning period. The 7 of us in my building did between 400 and 550 lunches a day. After work, I would take 11 of them lunches back to the kids in my neighborhood who couldn't get to the school or the buses wouldn't go to, and I would put them on their doorstep and ring the doorbell and take off so that we could keep our making sure that every student has access to nutritious meals, regardless of their parents' income or ability to pay, would make a huge difference in their lives. It would also make a difference in our lives. It's food service workers who are asked to enforce district meal debt policies. It's the clerical workers who have to call the students. One of the secretaries in St. Cloud, a friend of mine, told me once that she had to call a home and tell the student he couldn't walk at commencements because he owed money for school lunches. She said that was the worst part of her job. Today, a kindergartner came through my line and he said, "I am more than hungry, I am hangry," he told me. It broke my heart. But I want to thank you for the work that you do to ensure that the kids get the nutrition that they need and so that us food service workers can work on what our jobs, what we love to do is to feed them students. Thank you. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Lori Smith, for being with us today. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
And finally, we have Mandy Jung, who's a school teacher in St. Paul and is with us in person.
Hi,
And as you sit down, if you would again identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Hi, my name is Mandy Jung, and I am here as a member of St. Paul Federation of Educators. I was invited to speak with you today because I am a seventh grade science teacher, and I am a teacher TikTok content creator. On my platform, I talk about issues facing public school educators, and one thing that I spend a lot of time talking about is the need for universal free lunch here in Minnesota and the United States. So I'm honored to be here today to talk about why HF5 is important to my community. On the first day of school this year, I announced to my students that school lunches were no longer free. And this moment stays with me. The confusion, the darting eyes, the questions. There were students who realized in that moment that they were not going to eat that day. I love my students so much, and it has been a difficult year. We have had an increase in challenging student behaviors, and no doubt this is related to the trauma of the last couple years, but I have to also think that part of it is that they're hungry. It's hard to pay attention when your stomach is growling. It's hard to be kind to others when you're hungry. And it's hard to do your best when you don't feel your best. So, like I said, I teach middle school, and for middle schoolers, their prefrontal cortex is developing really quickly, and that's the social part of your brain, that's the regulation part of your brain, that's why they act the way that they act. And they're my favorite people on the planet. So in middle school, that's when you start to figure out how the world works. And for a lot of us, that's when we start to realize that the adults around us exist. So I want you to consider that maybe you're a seventh grader and you're in the lunch line, and you get up to the cafeteria worker and they tell you that you don't have any money in your account. And I'm sure all of us who've attended school have had that happen, just for being forgetful or for not having enough. So you might worry about who overheard that conversation. You might worry about what the cafeteria worker thinks about you and your family. And if your family can't put any money in your account, you see your family's embarrassment and frustration and stress as they receive emails and voicemails and letters reminding them that you have a negative account balance. So maybe you make the decision as a 12-year-old to avoid those negative feelings and you just don't get in the lunch line anymore. That burden is too great for a child to bear. The simplest solution is to just feed the kids. Just feed the kids. In the comments section of my TikToks, I have heard every argument against universal free lunch, and they have not always been eloquent or nice. But at the end of it all, I simply have to ask, what would you rather we spend our tax money on? We have a moral imperative as a society to take care of our most vulnerable community members. And sometimes that shows up as a carton of chocolate milk, 14 baby carrots, and a grilled cheese sandwich. I love my students so much, and I believe in them, and I know that you believe in them too. I'm inviting you to show that by ensuring that they are fed at school. Thank you for your time and your consideration of this important issue. This legislation will make a difference in my students' lives and in the lives of students across Minnesota.
Thank you, Mandy Jung. We appreciate it very much hearing from about your students. When this hearing was posted, we did request anybody to sign up for public testimony, and we do have someone that signed up for public testimony. Familiar to our committee, we'll have Mr. Adosh Uni from the Department of Education testify at this point. And can you please, as usual, identify yourself before you proceed?
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education, and those are some really tough acts to follow, but I really appreciate the opportunity here to testify on HF5 and provides funding for universal meals and mandatory CEP participation. In the education committees here and in the Education Finance Committee, and in the Senate, we're going to hear a lot this year about many measures around providing caring and qualified teachers for students, support for special education, investing in English learner needs, providing multi-pronged approaches for mental health, among many other topics. And all of these proposals are components to supporting the whole child. And making sure that all students are fed in schools is a fundamental component to supporting the whole child and ensuring their academic, behavioral, and social emotional success is met. School meals are important for student health and well-being and provide the students the nutrition they need throughout the day to learn. Kids who receive school meals are more likely to eat fruits, vegetables, and milk. These nutrient-dense foods contribute to a healthier body mass index and lower childhood obesity, and these health benefits are particularly pronounced among some of our low-income students. Research shows a well-nourished child is a better learner, test taker, and participant in school. Simply put, when kids have a full tummy, they are going to be able to pay attention much better in school. This allows them to focus on core subjects like reading and math, and social and emotional learning, and physical activities. Providing universal meals will also ensure, again, access to nutritious meals so that all students have their key, that are key to their educational and health support, eliminates the tiered eligibility system that limits participation for too many children whose families are struggling to make ends meet, reduces stigma associated with participating in school meals, eliminates school debt, and significantly reduces the administrative work required to operate the school nutrition programs and improving school nutrition finances. All of these we've heard about today from other testifiers. And if you'll indulge me, Madam Chair, we've taken a look at the amendment to make fully paid meals only applicable to students with family income less than 250% of the federal poverty guidelines. And our position at the department has been that creating another means-tested approach to free meals creates additional costs for not only MDE to develop a complex new system, and for but also for districts to modify their systems and train their staff to implement. And most importantly, I think the purpose of the universal meals proposal is a kid is a kid is a kid. And all kids deserve access to meals regardless of who they are and where they're coming from. But for kind of the more nitty-gritty part of it in terms of the administrative burdens there, and just to delve back into that angle, they'd also need to work with their forms vendor to create this new threshold. And so with the combined cost of that added administrative benefit, that would wipe out, you know, a lot of the potential savings we'd see. So put simply, providing free meals to all students not only is the right thing to do, but it also saves money because it reduces the complexity of the system and the cost to implement it.
Thank you, Mr. Unruh. Thank you for your testimony. All right. Any closing words in your presentation of your bill, Representative Jordan?
Madam Chair, I just hope that we'll remember this testimony. And just to reiterate what you, as truly powerful that testimony was, you forget after presenting on Zoom how powerful it is to hear from people sitting next to you. There is lots of other really incredible testimony from organizations and individuals and businesses supporting this bill as well in your packets, and I encourage you to take some time to look at all the different perspectives on why House File 5 is critical for Minnesota families right now.
All right. Thank you, Representative Jordan. We also have before us the A1 amendment, and I believe Representative Knutson will be offering this amendment. Would you like to move the amendment and then speak to what it says?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to offer the A1 amendment. This amendment provides school lunch and breakfast without charge to parents with children in households up to 250% of the federal poverty level, which is approximately $69,000 per year for a household of four. Under current law, federal and state funding provide meals free of charge to households with incomes at or below 185% of the federal poverty level. I agree that too many families remain in the bubble, and with the higher cost of energy, gas, groceries, it's making it very hard for families to pay their bills. However, rather than a universal program that subsidizes parents financially able to pay for the care and feeding of their children, we can increase the current income threshold to help more families. Thank you, members, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Knutson. Now I'll next turn to the bill author, Representative Jordan, to speak to this amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I oppose this amendment. This amendment would create bureaucratic barriers for students, families, individual schools, districts, and our state That would actually balloon the administrative cost of school meals, as you heard earlier from MDE. Furthermore, districts already have a very tough time collecting the forms for the existing free and reduced price meal programs. Forcing schools to also verify family income levels would result in even fewer food insecure families receiving school meals. Finally, members, this is a bill to provide meals to all, and that means all students. Schools provide every child a desk, even if some students have the ability to buy a desk. I hope you'll remember, members, really remember and think about what Will said. Think about what Amber said. Food is essential to children's learning and should be provided to all students. I ask for a no vote on this amendment.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just add that the federal poverty guidelines are really inadequate in identifying what the real definition of poverty is in this country. There are political reasons why we don't want to update it, because then we create more poor people, and nobody wants to be responsible for that. So I think when you look at the federal poverty guidelines, it's not really an accurate measure of who can afford to pay for meals. Thank you.
I'll return to the author of the amendment. Any closing words?
No, and I do agree with you on that point, and that's why we are, you know, offering 250% of that number. So thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So we will now take a vote on the A1 amendment. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion, the amendment does is not adopted. All right. So I think we're ready for the bill. All right. And I just have to scroll down to make sure I'm going to say the right words, because this is important. All right. All right. So we will we haven't discussed the bill yet, have we?
Correct.
I apologize.
And I'd like to speak.
There
I'd
you
like
are
to
skipping
speak
ahead.
I'll speak last, Madam Chair, if there's other comments.
Yes. Thank you, Lead Bennett, for for this point. And we'll get the list of people that would like to be recognized. Representative Bigbert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Thank you to the testifiers. Representative Jordan, thank you for your passion. So I appreciate that. Testifiers, both here in person and online, thank you. I just have a couple of questions, and for those of you in the audience, I'm a middle school principal, so I see firsthand the lunch process in a middle school. Bless your heart for being a middle school teacher. I see that every day. So, not now, I don't, but I just have a couple clarifying questions so that I can fully understand the bill, and I'm looking at it through that lens. So we heard a lot about hunger, and I would agree that's an important thing to address. Under this bill, on line 11A, it says a federally reimbursed lunch. So is, and I would assume, and this is my question, is that one lunch, one federally reimbursable lunch?
Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair, Representative Bakeberg, I'm not sure which line you're referring to.
Oh, 111.
Okay.
7.11. Yeah, 1.11.
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Bakeberg, yes, it is one student, one meal.
Perfect.
And in section one, it does refer to lunches. Breakfast is handled later in the bill.
And follow-up questions, Representative Baker.
Yeah, I have a few, so do you want me to just go through, Madam Chair?
Well, we can, yes, I think we have time. And, yeah. And I'm assuming that this is not for the next 45 minutes, just to check it.
No,
okay,
no.
Thank you.
So that helps me understand, because my own son, and who's 16, will get 3 and 4 entrees at a time. And I see that oftentimes, and I think our testimonies would also agree. Could you also just, how do you define a school? Does this include in-home daycare centers? you know, larger daycare centers. Could you just specify that as well?
And
Sorry.
Thank you. Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair, this would refer to any site enrolled in the federal school meals program. So if a site was not enrolled in that, they're not covered under this bill. If they are, they are.
Representative Baker.
Madam Chair, so we talked about a la carte items, and in the context that I'm thinking about a la carte, kids go through the line, they get their entree, you know, they get their spaghetti and all that stuff they go through, but then they'll ask for additional food, they'll go and eat, and then they'll come back and get a cookie or a bag of chips. How is that addressed in this bill, Madam Chair?
Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair, this does not apply to a la carte items. Those would still be a student's own budget. So you couldn't get the Gatorade for free, for example, or whatever it is.
Representative Jordan? Representative Baker, I'll get this.
Madam Chair, I think it's important to understand that this is often why districts have students have negative balances in their lunch account. It's often because of seconds, and it's because of a la carte items. And we won't be fully addressing the negative lunch balances with this bill, just to be clear. So unless I'm missing something, Madam Chair, in the bill.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Any other further discussion on the bill? Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will just say my son does this, and it is very annoying, and he's always getting extra things, and we're like, why did we run out of money already? We can afford to pay for that, and that's okay. But the children who can't afford to pay for it will get their basic meals paid for. So, thanks.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Representative Keel. Keeler, I'm sorry. All right, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for doing this. I mentioned in my intro when I was here, I worked in Indian education for a long time. I did my practicum work around the barriers to academic success, and access to food, as we all know, is one of the top issues. But the area that I want to bring up that I think that this addresses is our truancy, because when we, and bullying, you know, I had a district that would put stamps on kids' hands, and you knew that meant that you basically came from a family that didn't have the money that everybody else had. And we know how kids are. I mean, kids get that way if you have nicer sneakers or not. Like, our kids are really mean to each other. We need to eliminate the opportunities for bullying. So I do appreciate it from that lens. But also, a lot of kids that I used to work with, and I know a lot of us work with, come to school because that's their only meal. And when it's up for conversation that if you're poor, you get an alternate meal or you get a less than better meal than everybody else. I think that does a disservice for all of our students. So I appreciate your advocacy in this. I know that this is not just for this generation. You know, I'm always future focused, and I appreciate your advocacy, but also I think that this truly addresses truancy. My one question is more around breakfast. There is some standards that say that we have to have the opportunity for breakfast, but when our students are tardy, is there any time frame that breakfast has to end? Because that's one of the areas of concerns that comes to me, that if we have a student who's coming to school late, chances are that there's a higher likelihood that they didn't maybe get that nutritious breakfast at home. So can you just tell me where we land with breakfast on this?
Representative Jordan.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Pryor, and thank you, Representative Keeler, for your work. My bill does not specify that breakfast must be served between the hours of this and this. Many schools do participate in breakfast after the bell, which is like a brown bag lunch where you get a milk and a cereal bar or a piece of fruit or whatever that breakfast may be within the USDA guidelines. My bill does not talk about that, so it would really depend on the individual school district for setting that timing for breakfast service, unfortunately.
Just going back to that, encouraging school districts.
Representative Keeler.
Sorry, thank you, Madam Chair. That we need to also know that we need to feed kids when they're in school, and sticking to these really rigid time frames, thinking holistically of our students is always how they do their best academically. So I appreciate you and the work that you've done. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. I'm going to recognize Representative Mueller next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just have a question real quick for the author of the bill. What is the protocol I also worked in middle school. Shout out to our middle school peeps. We love them a lot. And so I know that we had several students who did not like what was served in the school and either would take the meal and throw it away, or they would bring from home, or they just wouldn't eat. And so what happens with people who choose not to have a school meal? How is that? And, you know, this is being paid for. So what is the process for schools when do they get reimbursement if we don't have students who are eating? Or what? And then what happens to the food that gets thrown away? All of those type of things.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reimbursement is only for lunches that are served. So if a student, I was a picky eater, and so I often brought my lunch from home. I'm sure my mom is watching this and is rolling her eyes right now. But I was a picky eater and brought my lunch from home often. And if a student choose to do that, they and the school did not serve them, that would not be reimbursed.
Representative Mueller, and follow up?
Real quickly. Thank you, Madam Chair. So how is that kept track of? Like, because we're talking about how we're going to reduce paperwork and administrative costs and all those things. How is that going to be kept track of?
Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair. Sorry, it's been a few years since I've presented a bill in this room. But schools will keep track of how many meals they have to submit the reimbursements to the state and the federal government.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Vuo King.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Jordan, for bringing this bill forward. I know a lot of us around the table work in the schools or have worked in the schools, and I come from a big family of teachers, so I've heard a lot of these stories firsthand and watched students that really do struggle to make sure they're getting food at school. But I think it, when you say it's going to eliminate the paperwork, I truly do believe that, because districts will already be tracking or going to have to track meals that they're serving because they need to know what to order in the future. Mm-hmm. So that part doesn't worry me. It's the form and the tracking, the reimbursements. It's just one more thing that will be helped by this bill. The other thing that will be helped by this bill is, frankly, some of you are new here and you haven't seen that over the years. We've been trying to put Band-Aids on this problem for a while, such as like lunch shaming and things that have shown not to be helpful or work. We had a bill on the books 2 years ago about lunch shaming, and I know the former rep that worked on it worked really hard on it, but for years and years, we've been saying, let's just feed kids. Because the lunch shaming, Legal Aid came by, did a year-long study on school district policies across the state, and they all still had the lunch shaming policies in there, even after we passed legislation here. So I truly do believe that this is needed. I also have trust in our schools that they'll figure it out at the local level, and many of them have come to us and said that this would make their lives so much easier, as well as make their students' lives better. And frankly, it does put money right back into families' pockets.
Thank you, Representative Joaquin. And finally, we will turn to Representative Bennett. Thank you, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just some final comments. And I'd like to kind of point out two things that I noticed in this bill that are a little bit perplexing to me. And first of all, I want to thank you, Representative Jordan, for caring and for your passion, and I think this is being brought forth in totally good faith. And there are issues to deal with, but I question a little bit how we're dealing with them. But I just point out that, you know, we're adding more state aid to districts with lower rates of children in poverty, and that's really counter to our funding formula, where it's all based on poverty. So the state is actually paying the gap, of course, that the income eligibility doesn't cover, including very wealthy families. And so this is kind of counter to how we fund things in our education formula. The other thing, excuse me, is I think it's interesting that this actually provides public funds for private schools, because those private schools that enroll in the federal program will also get these state funds. And I know my colleagues on the other side of the aisle typically don't like that, so that's kind of perplexing to me too, but I'm not going to complain about that. But anyway, I will just say in closing my reason for voting no on this, and it's not that I don't care about kids who are hungry, because we want children whose families cannot afford to feed them to have lunch or breakfast or whatever. So that is not the issue here. The issue is the solution we're providing is rather a shotgun technique instead of a surgical approach. And I think a surgical approach would be better. If we had the perfect world where money grew on trees and we could just go pick it off of trees, then this would be wonderful. But it's not. And we have a surplus now, but in 2 years we could very well be in a deficit. We don't know, and we know that will happen at some point. Then what do we do? And how do we continue this program or not? And is it going to compete with other academic programs? So I think surgically adjusting the eligibility requirements would be a better way to hit those gaps. And we know more families are struggling because of the high inflation. No doubt that bills are higher, and so we should address that, but not a shotgun that just pays for everybody no matter what. I don't believe that's the best use of our taxpayer dollars. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. We are getting short on time, so we're going to move the bill at this point. I'm sorry. we already gave you opportunity, Representative Jordan, for closing comments, but I'll give you one more. Thank you. All right, and thank you for bringing the bill forward. We are in complete agreement that we're talking about the right subject, which is children having nutrition, students having nutrition and meals. We may have some differences on if this is the perfect bill or not, but we appreciate the discussion today. And that being said, Representative Berg renews her motion to have this House Law 5 be re-referred to Education Finance Committee. And we will take a vote at this point. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion carries, and House File 5 is re-referred to Education Finance. All right. Thank you. And we have another bill. And another great presentation ahead of us. And we'll let the audience change and new testifiers move to the table. So we'll still have the same amount of time.
You can cut off.
Oh, yeah.
You can sit next to your
eye.
You can sit here.
I know. All right. Members, we're ready for our second and final bill of the afternoon. If I can have your attention again. All right. Next, we will be hearing House File 44 from Representative Feist, who is a member of our committee. Representative Feist, it is your intention to refer this bill to the Education Finance Committee. Am I correct? And that is your motion?
That is my motion, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Representative Feist, please introduce your bill. And again, identify yourself over here.
Thank you. Representative Sandra Feist, moving the menstrual equity bill. I would like to start by saying that I love all my bills equally, but not all bills are this much fun. And I just want to thank the student advocates who have worked so closely with me, the National Council of Jewish Women in Minneapolis, and just the entire advocacy community. This bill is a really big deal. It came to us from students, and I am super excited to be here today presenting it to you. So Edith, a Hopkins High School student, came to me in an email with some data, some articles, and said, this is something that matters to students. We need to do this in Minnesota. And I read the articles, I read her email, and I agreed. We need to do this. Period poverty is a widespread issue that directly impacts students' ability to get an education. One out of every 10 menstruating students miss school during their menstrual cycle due to a lack of period products. This absenteeism directly impacts educational attainment and indirectly impacts it as well through its correlation with increased depression and anxiety. This bill before you requires schools to provide free period products in all student bathrooms, grades 4 through 12. It is funded through an increase of $2 per pupil in the operating capital revenue. Yes. I'd like to just give some quotes from the materials that you have before you, and I would encourage you to look at a lot of the statements from school nurses, from students, from educators, youth workers. So here's just a sampling. A youth worker submitted a statement saying that period products are like soap and toilet paper. A rural educator talked about piling up absences due to period poverty. Multiple statements talk about period products as a necessity. Students talked about feeling comfortable and able to focus. They talk about having period products as something that relieves their stress. They talked about feeling safer, cared for, and respected by their schools when they have access to those period products. School nurses provided a lot of statements in your materials, talking about how students felt stranded when they couldn't afford these products, talked about how just having those products available and accessible was educational, just in terms of like understanding bodily functions. They talked about keeping kids in school and how these are basic health supplies. So this is a wise investment. Helping students who regularly miss school stay in class is a wise investment because chronic absenteeism costs a lot more than just paying for free period products. Notably, this investment impacts our ability to invest in all students because when schools have less funds because they're paying to address chronic absenteeism, they're not able to fully invest in the entire student body. Providing these products openly also has the impact of normalizing conversations around periods to reduce the shame or stigma attached to this normal bodily function that impacts a full half of the human population. We ensure that students have toilet paper, paper towels, soap, and Band-Aids, and we should ensure that students have period products as well. So I am very excited and honored to be here today to present the menstrual equity bill. And I'll leave it at that.
Great. Thank you, Representative Feist, and I believe that we do have some testifiers with us today that we look forward to hearing. First of all, from Hopkins High School, Elif, if you could introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for giving me this opportunity to speak today. My name is Elif Osterk, and I'm a junior at Hopkins High School. The first time that I truly became aware of the toll that a period takes on a young girl in school was during my eighth grade. Each and every day that I went to the girls' bathroom, I would hear whispers asking friends for products, and I could feel the heightened stress caused by that time of the month. What truly frustrated me, though, was the fact that I had friends who didn't just forget their products, but couldn't afford them in the first place. I had friends whose parents couldn't give them access to this luxury product. I had friends who decided to just skip school during that time because we cannot learn when we are leaking. I thought to myself, how is this fair? How do we expect our students to carry this burden on them throughout the school day and still perform well? My number one priority should be to learn, not to find a pad. So I can no longer be complacent with this injustice. During the fall of my ninth grade, I emailed various representatives, hoping they too would see my perspective on this. I received an excited response from Representative Feist and began working with her. Later, we teamed with NCJW and decided on language. This is a low-cost effort that would help so many lives from having to miss out on their right to an education. Tampons and pads aren't optional. They are necessities. They hold the same purpose as toilet paper, which is always free for use. Yet these products are not so readily available within the walls of our schools. Why is that when they make the difference between a normal day and a traumatic one? Period poverty within schools is impeding on our students' educations and the right to be respected as human beings. It is time to finally provide this one product that will allow them to peacefully go through the school day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up. We have, I believe in person, Evelyn and Tori from Egan High School. And again, if you can identify yourself and proceed with their testimonies.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Evelyn Gore.
And I'm Tori Robarsh.
And we both graduated last year from Egan High School as leaders who work to end period poverty in District 196. The District 196 Period Poverty Project initially started out through an Honors 10 speech class, where we were given the task to present a speech about a topic that we were passionate about. In an all-female group, we found common ground with the issue of period poverty. As we spent more time researching, our passions grew. Within minutes, we were emailing our superintendent, Mary Krieger, and inviting her to come and watch our class presentation. After partnering up with our Women's Empowerment Club, speaking at several school board meetings and surveying our own school body, District 196 awarded us with a $10,000 grant. This grant tangibly allowed us to actually make a difference. Today, in District 196, you can find free tampons and pads in the gender-neutral, women's, and at least one men's bathroom for every school. While our story is seen as a success story, this equity needs to be brought to the rest of the students in Minnesota. It's not fair to assume that other districts can do what District 196 has done. My district is very fortunate to have the resources that other areas in this state do not have. So I ask you to use my Period Poverty Project not as an example for what other districts should do, but instead as an example of how providing free menstrual products for students is crucial in creating the safe learning environment that we so often claim to create.
As Evelyn said, a part of our research, we wrote and administered a menstruation-based survey to the student body of Egan High School. We found overwhelming support for the addition of free products. When asked if there had ever been a time when they didn't have access to a product, 195 students offered us answers. 66% said that they didn't want to miss class by going to the nurse's office, 35% said that their teacher wouldn't let them go, 18% said that they did not have money to give to the nurse who was paying for these products out of her own pocket, and 43% said that they were too scared or embarrassed to go and talk to the nurse and ask for one. As Representative Fye said, 1 in 10 Americans have missed school due to a lack of period products. Hundreds of thousands of people are missing out on critical opportunities like a well-deserved education. We expect that due to the boxes we implemented, we will see an increase in attendance. People that don't regularly have access to these products at home don't feel fearful of being unclean or insecure about a lack of hygiene that's out of their control. By providing these products inside of the bathrooms, we are not only keeping students in the building, we are keeping them in their seats. Period poverty is not a political issue. Period poverty is not a way to impose power over school districts or to question their ability to make their own decisions. Period poverty is a health issue and it is an equity issue. Once more, I am urging you to understand the fact that students of this state will be immeasurably grateful for the decision that you've made with them in mind. They will be grateful not only for the access to products, not only for the chance to maintain an equal education with their peers, but also for the work that is being done to normalize an uncontrollable bodily function. Period poverty is not something that can be disagreed with. Period poverty is indisputable, and your students need you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Our next testifier is Kathleen Mahi, who is a licensed school nurse and in a middle school.
Chair Lori Pryor and members of the House Education Policy Committee, my name is Kathleen Mahi, and I'm a licensed school nurse at Eastham Middle School in St. Paul. I'm not the first middle school teacher or worker today, so I'm in a room with my great company. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to briefly speak with you today about an important health issue that impacts half of our student population. This statement is in support of HF 44, which would provide access to menstrual products in Minnesota school bathrooms. As a middle school nurse, I assist several students daily that are unexpectedly in need of menstrual supplies. As you can imagine, this is a humiliating experience for my 6th to 8th grade students. In my office, I seek donations and also purchase menstrual supplies to attempt to supply the 300 plus students for when they are in need. The donations and my personal funds are limited, and the sustainability is uncertain. Because of financial barriers, some students are unable to attend school due to lack of menstrual supplies. This is a very unfortunate and inequitable situation that leads to poor academic outcomes. On the bright side, the menstrual inequity issue can be easily fixed. By providing free menstrual supplies in school restrooms across the state, humiliating situations will be avoided and absenteeism will be decreased. Menstrual supplies are a basic hygienic necessity and should be as readily available to students as toilet paper. It's time to move forward with an equitable plan for all students. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen Molly. And our next testifier is going to be remote. And we have Marit Mattson, a student at Mankato. And if you can identify yourself as you come on again and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Marit Mattson and I'm 14 years old. I'm a student at Mankato East High School and I present this statement in support of HF 44, which aims to provide access to free menstrual products in Minnesota school bathrooms. Providing free period products will remove unnecessary stress from students' everyday lives. Every menstruating individual knows what it's like to be caught off guard without the supplies you need, but this does not need to be the reality in our schools. We can provide students with the period products they need for a safer, more equitable learning experience. Nobody deserves to worry whether they will have access to or be able to afford basic hygiene products while they are at school. Right now, it is up to students to help provide for themselves and each other. Right now, I am currently working with a group of students across our district to build a drive that would provide period products in our school bathrooms. We hold it dear to us that every student has access to the products they need, no matter their financial standing. No matter where they come from, they deserve to have access to this basic hygiene product. I am fortunate enough that this has never been a concern for me, but many people are not, and access to period products should not be based on the good fortune of the student. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us. And I just will have to say, everybody's got better internet than I do. There's no. All right, our next remote testifier is Trinity Hanna, a student at Carleton College.
Hi, my name is Trinity Hanif, and I'm currently a freshman at Carleton College and a member of the Young Women's Initiative Cabinet. When I was in high school, I experienced firsthand the educational and economic consequences of having a menstrual cycle. My period caused me to miss school, leave class for extended periods of time, and overall just lose focus. If I forgot to bring menstrual products, I spent a significant amount of time searching for tampons and pads, or I would have to leave school for the day. This was an issue for many menstruators at my school. So I tried to convince my school board in 2020 to provide students with free menstrual products throughout bathrooms. They refused, so I personally acquired a grant to fund the effort. Every week, I had to leave class to restock the bathrooms myself. Last year, when our supply ran out, I had to leave school early to drive to a warehouse in Golden Valley and pick up more pads and tampons. This burden should not be placed on students. Schools provide a variety of hygiene products at no cost. Toilet paper, soap, paper towels, Band-Aids. Why aren't menstrual products on that list? Why are we okay with putting menstruators across the state at an educational disadvantage? There is still a stigma surrounding menstruation. It takes an emotional toll, especially on young students. I used to constantly worry about bleeding through my clothes, and I feared bullying, harassment, and public humiliation of an accident. We should ensure that students feel supported in their educational settings, not ignored and embarrassed. I support this bill because it's the right thing to do for menstruators across Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Carlin Davril, RN, a licensed school nurse in District 287. And please again introduce yourself and perfect and give the correct pronunciation of your name as I struggled through it.
Hello. My name is Carlin Diaveril. Only my mom calls me Carlin when I'm in trouble. I usually go by Kari. I will answer to Carlin, but I'll sit up straight. And yes, I am a licensed school nurse at South Education Center in Richfield. It's part of Intermediate 287, which is a club for many, many unique students. So statistics give you information. Stories give you empathy. Action gives you respect and gives justice. For girls under the age of 18, 20% of our kids do not have access to hygiene supplies. 10% of our entire country, but 20% of our girls, our kids. That means in any given day, 20 out of 100 girls could miss 3 to 7 days of school every month just because they have body parts called ovaries and uteruses. If you need to talk any of these terms later, let me know. I can talk about any of it. The stigma toward females also harms our young men. What message do we give our young men around topics like respect, consent, human value if basic care items are withheld from half of their classmates? It's not just a female issue. What message are our boys receiving? In order to understand, you must hear the stories of others. Every month, kids with good attendance will noticeably be absent from my school. Where's so-and-so? I'll ask. A friend will usually tell me. Upon their return, I often hear not excuses, but poverty truths, keeping girls from class due to lack of affordability of feminine supplies, housing insecurity, lack of laundry, lack of the ability to afford detergent to wash their soiled clothing so they're not coming to school. Kids sidle into my office to ask for feminine supplies, and in my garbage behind, in my clogged toilets, I have rolled up toilet paper, rolled up socks, younger siblings' diapers that are being used in any way so that they can come to school. Working with young teens from cultures where any topic deemed anything remotely sexual is taboo, many times they don't even actually have the language to explain to me what the problem is because it is not talked about at home. They come to me and they have a downcast eyes and they have a flushed face and they kind of look at me and I know what they need. They don't have to ask, but they don't even have the language and they are so embarrassed to ask. They're shamed to ask for basic need health necessities because they have received the message not only from their homes but also from our greater culture, and that includes us, that they are vulnerable, that they are considered less than for a normal body function, and that they deserve society's scorn. That's the message they've received, and they don't even have the ability to ask. For many of my unique learners, my special education students, financial hardship is brought on by their increased care needs, as often one parent is unable to work at all so that they can care for that special needs student. For my immigrant families, living in large extended family groups is a protection, but it's also an action of financial survival. My students and their families work 1, 2, 3 jobs, nights, weekends, to help pay for rent. There is no money for extras. Feminine hygiene products are extra if you can't pay for heat. For my kids who are homeless and highly mobile, getting access to a washer and dryer in my office is the only reason they sometimes come to school. They hide behind my desk, under a blanket, and they wait for their clothes to dry before they go to class. And I feed them granola bars because they haven't had breakfast. Let's go back to the other one. We stock toilet paper in public bathrooms because I have lots of favorite children's books, but one of them that I adore is called Everyone Poops. Last time I checked, men, if you consider yourself male, raise your hand if you have your extra roll of toilet paper with you in case the supplies are not there when you need it. You do not have to raise your hand, but if women who identify as female, raise your hand if you always, when you needed it, had extra supplies in your purse or your backpack, knowing that you would always need it, or you always handed one to a friend. There is your gender difference. a normal body function that affects half of our school population is considered a luxury. For kids to learn, trauma-informed practice states a child must feel safe as well as identify to be a valued part of a school community. For students who are born genetically female, part of basic safety is providing for their normal body needs. We need to raise our girls to feel empowered while also raising both genders to respect each other in all our beautiful forms. Stocking supplies in a bathroom is a small gesture, but the message that the girl child is valued with their bodies respected within class walls puts action behind the claim that we want them in school. A young, brilliant, so much smarter than me woman named Amanda Gorman has a voice of wisdom far beyond her years, says, a quiet life isn't always peace, and the norms and notations of what just is isn't always justice. I think we need to change what always has been just is. Stock the bathrooms, allow kids to be in school. Being female should not be a barrier to education. Thanks.
Thank you. And finally, we have Thomas Stinson, RN, licensed school nurse at Harding High School. And if you can please identify yourself and then begin your testimony.
Hello, thank you, Madam Chair and host education committee members for allowing me to testify today. My name is Dr. Thomas Stinson. I'm a practicing LSN or licensed school nurse, a public health nurse, also a proud member of the St. Paul Federation of Educators. I'm also on the policy and council for American Federation of Teachers and a professor at St. Mary's University in the nursing program. I worked for the St. Paul Public Schools now going on 25 years. Today I work at Harding High School, which we have an enrollment of around 1,900 students. I'm here to support to end period poverty in Minnesota schools. Every school I've worked at, period products has been an issue. School nurses don't have the funding for period products, and many pay for their products out of their own pockets. Period products is a basic need for our students, just like soap and toilet paper in our restrooms. Every single day, students come to my health office for period products. Many students don't have the money or means to get period products, so they rely on the public schools. I see probably 40 or 50 students a day, and many have to wait in order for me to talk with them. If we had period products available in restrooms, they'd move along quicker. Making period products available and more accessible will also decrease the amount of educational time lost. It is common for students to have accidents with menses, and I contribute this to not having period products available. If this happens, the student needs to go home, they miss the rest of the day, and this also contributes to more educational loss. We can't expect individual students to fund period products, because they won't. We need to have legislative support. Providing period products in our public schools is a public health issue and should be a right. Please support our work to end period poverty in Minnesota schools. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to have Mr. Simpson say.
That's very fine. Thank you. And next we're going to take up the A1 amendment for this bill. And I believe Representative Erdahl, you'll be presenting the A1.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the amendment. And I would like to emphasize, I recognize this is an important issue. I appreciate the testimony of those who have been testifying, and Representative Feist for bringing this forward. I will also add that many of the concerns were also relayed to me by my wife last night. So, again, that said, my amendment inserts on line 22, after the word by, the word female. This is just about practicality. I believe that these products should be most available to those that would use them, girls. And this amendment makes that more likely.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. To the author of the bill, would you speak to the amendment, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would encourage the committee to vote no on this amendment for a few reasons. Practical, financial, social, emotional. First, there are a lot of schools that are moving towards gender-neutral bathrooms, and if we add female, we might become obsolete very quickly. Second, not all students who menstruate are female. We need to make sure that all students have access to these products. There are obviously less non-female menstruating students, and therefore their usage will be much slower, and that was actually calculated into the cost of this and how much we decided to fund it. And so we do not expect that the non-female menstruating students will use these products as much as the students using female bathrooms, but it's important to have them there. And that brings me to the social-emotional reasons for that. These students who are not female, who menstruate, face a greater stigma and barrier to asking for these products, and so providing them in an easily accessible place in all student bathrooms is particularly important for those students. And lastly, I'll just mention that a lot of schools, as our testifiers have said, have done this already. They provided it in all student bathrooms. There have not been issues. And this just helps us, again, normalize conversations around the menstrual cycle and make sure that everyone feels comfortable around these products that so many of us need. Thank you. And so I would encourage folks to vote no on the amendment. Thank you. Oh, and I'm so sorry, Madam Chair. My testifier also wanted to comment on this.
I will recognize Dr. Stinson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I strongly recommend no to the amendment as well. I think this adds another barrier for our kids, right? I meet with students all the time, like our GSA program, and our kids are smart. Accessibility is number one. This is just another way to divide people in our schools. And we want to make people comfortable. Our kids are talking about things that we don't talk about as adults. That's why we're here. We have a great testifiers who are from different schools. And we want access just available for everybody. And to add that doesn't make sense to me. So I strongly say no for the amendment.
Other members, discussion to the amendment before us, the A1. Representative Erdl, final word on the amendment.
Well, this old Norwegian has trouble understanding some of that. But, you know, Representative Feist, maybe you can explain some things to me some other time offline here. Thank you.
Right. We'll take a vote on the A1 amendment. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
No. The amendment does not carry. All right, and now we will look for a discussion on the underlying bill. Member discussion. I recognize Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Feist, for working on this, and thank you for the advocates. I think also thank you to our school health staff. I think often we hear the stories that when there's needs, it tends to be our own staff that come out of their pockets for that. So I don't want to move forward without recognizing the amazing work that you all do to see the need for our students and uplift that. But it's not your responsibility for it to come out of your pocket. But I do want to acknowledge that. Again, back to the point I made around the food is that this is actually an anti-bullying bill. This is actually an increase in attendance and a reduction of truancy or completely missing school. And so for me, it's important to address when and how we're going to implement this. So we know that the stats will tell us that bullying increases in the tweens, so between ages of 9 and 12, which is also when menstruating tends to start to happen. So can you just walk through, so we have some elementary schools that actually like have fifth grades and stuff. Will these be available in the elementary schools as well?
Representative Feist.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Keeler. The answer is yes. So the products will be provided starting in fourth grade bathrooms. And this is particularly important because studies show that students are actually, or like
humans actually menstruating earlier. And so making sure that we have these products for younger kids who are even less emotionally equipped in a lot of cases to deal with the fact that they have started menstruating is particularly important. So I think about my daughter, she's in fifth grade. Just making sure that those products are available for her age group, I think, is particularly important.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Price, for bringing this bill. And look, I remembered the red. And the story about that, I got up early this morning, and it was because of my daughter I remembered the red. We had a conversation this morning, and I was telling her to be safe on the slick roads, is how icy it was. But I have three daughters. And our middle daughter, the teenager, she often has her friends over. So I've experienced the consternation and anxiety when those products are not around. I've had to make runs to the store to ensure that they're there. Now I just try to often make sure we're stocked up. But I understand what that disruption does, and we're at home. I can only imagine what it's like at school. So thank you for bringing this bill. I believe it will do a great deal of support for our students that need it. And I'm looking happy and forward to voting yes on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Any other discussion to the bill? Representative Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Representative Feist for bringing this bill forward, and especially the students who brought this to our attention, which we were talking about. We were nowhere near this savvy or this socially active on these important issues when we were their age. This bill is titled the Menstrual Equity Bill for a reason. Just like we were talking about the free and reduced lunch, othering other children, separating children, this does as well. And I think as we are looking at rampant bullying and other damaging issues for our students, this is a simple thing to do to make sure everyone has what they need and nobody needs to be embarrassed. Doesn't matter if you understand or not how a student identifies. If they need the product, they need the product. Thank you, Representative Feist, for bringing this forward.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair. I do have a question for the author of the bill, please. What in statute now prevents a school from providing menstrual products?
Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Rep. Mueller. Nothing prevents them from providing these products, but for some reason, most schools do not provide them, even though they provide toilet paper, Band-Aids, paper towel. And so this bill will require them to provide these products and also make sure that they have the money to afford it.
Follow up, Representative Young.
Thank you, Chair. Well, and I know I've, again, been teaching both in middle school and high school. Myself, I'm a woman. It's a ride. It's in school, and I understand. I so appreciate all of your testifiers, especially the students who came and shared their story. Their testimony already shows how this can already be done. And I note in their testimony, they said, this shouldn't be taken as a way for schools to do it. It should be shown how we all need to be mandated to do it. But the truth is, nothing in statute prevents them from doing it already. And having the chance of them to go through the process. I've had my students do this too. We did project-based learning where they brought awareness to a problem, brought awareness to an injustice, and the local school board was able to take action, and our local community was able to rally around our students, and our students were able to take ownership and able to have a sense of accomplishment as they completed this. So I applaud this bill. At the same time, I wonder, there is nothing in statute that prevents our local school districts from doing this right now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We are approaching the end of our meeting. I'm going to recognize Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Feist, thank you for bringing this bill forward. It's another example of an issue I think is totally valid. And I appreciate you bringing light to it and all the testifiers. Excellent. Again, it's the solution that I have a problem with, and in this case, it's taking away local control. The solution, in my mind, should empower, not mandate. And we should, instead of mandating, we should be empowering our school boards and our local administrators to adopt best practices. And MDA, what a great job to be able to come alongside school districts and show them, here's how all the different ways many other districts are doing this. This is something that's important. And then encourage our students to advocate for themselves, because that's what we want them to do. And I think when we mandate things like this, we not only take away the local control from our leaders, our local leaders, like school board members and so on, but we take away the power from the very students where we want them to learn to advocate for themselves. So I would much rather see this, let's give the districts the $2 per student for their operating capital budgets, but then allow them to determine how best to do this. Don't mandate it. They might find a local service group that will donate all those products, and then they can use that $2 for something else that's really important in their capital budget. So I'm going to disagree with this on just another mandate, even though thank you for funding it. That's a good thing. But our districts don't need another mandate. We want to empower them, and that's why I will be voting no, because I want to empower our local schools and our students and all those local school board members and not just constantly tell them what they have to do. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Final words, Representative Feist.
Thank you, Chair. So access to menstrual products is a human right. And while I find it incredibly inspiring that we have 14-year-olds and all of these wonderful, amazing, empowered students who are much more with it than I was at that age, coming to us and telling us what they need and making it happen, including in Munster School District, where they made a cute flyer that I wanted to show everyone, we should not put it on the shoulders of students to advocate for their basic human rights. All schools are not providing these products. They are essential for students to remain in school, to have full access to a quality education, and that is why I have brought this bill. Menstrual products are not a luxury. They ensure the health, dignity, and full participation of all students in our public schools, and I would urge members to vote yes, please.
Thank you, Representative Feist. We'll now take a vote on House File. Just a second. All right. And we'll have Representative Feist renew her motion to refer House File 44 to the Education Finance Committee.
Yes. So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 44 will be referred to the Education Finance Committee. Thank you, Representative. All right, and we are at 4:30, and we will be adjourned for the day. Mm-hmm.